Hey, what is going on, everybody? Coming to you on a Thursday, and I couldn't record last night. Life got in the way, and so Johnny and I were going to record tonight, and he texted me right before we were going to record and let me know that a tornado is moving through his area. And I guess Delaware, Ohio, Central Ohio area, they are getting just hammered with all kinds of hail and rain. And the weather report I looked at said tornado imminent. So he's hunkered down in the basement. His power's flickering. He's going to join us if he can. We didn't want to skip this week because there was some pretty big stuff that happened over the weekend, and so we want to talk about that. So I'll be doing this solo tonight. It probably won't be as entertaining without Johnny. It's just my dull, boring self, but we do have some big news to share, so we need to go ahead and get to it. And the first thing that I want to go over today is this event that happened in California, in La Quinta, California, over the last 6 days. And this event was put on by Lululemon. And it wasn't very well advertised. I didn't really hear much about it up until it actually got started. And it's a pretty interesting concept. And Lululemon have had 10 of their female athletes come out to this lake. It's near Palm Springs, California, and in that area. And these 10 female athletes, they all wore Lululemon gear that was designed to help them, go further than they ever have in a 6 day period. And these are some pretty accomplished athletes, not only accomplished by means of ultra marathon wins and things like that, but also just their presence in the running world and the good things that they're doing for the community. So it was really cool to see these ladies, go out there and do this event. So it was a 2.5 mile loop around the lake out there. And some of the more notable ladies that ran were Leia Yingling, Devin Yanko, Myrna, the Myrna Invader, Valerio, and Camille Heron, okay, and Stephanie Flippin as well. The one thing that happened over these 6 days is that Camille Heron went out there and just absolutely destroyed a whole bunch of records, okay. And it was crazy to follow this on social media in real time as she was setting all these records. So and I'm going to go over those records in a minute, but here's the final results for the 10 ladies that ran in this Lululemon event. And it was an invitation only event for these 10 ladies. So Camille Heron goes on to do 220 laps in 6 days, which is 560.33 miles. And that is a women's 6 day world record. Okay. So just an amazing accomplishment. I mean, just incredible. And just took the world by storm with that. I mean, she's already set plenty of records. Camille is just very accomplished, but what she did this weekend, we haven't seen the likes of in years. So, and I'm going to go over all that with you in a minute. Leia Yuengling came in second, and she did 157 laps. That's 400 miles, which that in itself is an amazing feat, 400 miles. So, and then Montana Farah Seton did 124 laps. She was third, and I don't think they were really competing to see who was going to do the most laps or anything like that. It was all just kind of like, how far can they go? You know, they wanted to push themselves to go. So, and Devin Yanko and Yoon Young Kang both did 123 laps. So they were just one lap short of Montana. And, you know, they did 313.27 miles. And yeah, so, and Myrna did 56 laps, 142 miles for her. So 142.63 miles. So she did awesome out there. And she's pretty well known. I'm sure everybody's heard of the Myrna Vader. So congrats to all these ladies. I mean, it was a pretty cool event that they put on. But let's go over Camille's records. I mean, this is just absolutely insane what she was able to accomplish here. And there was an article, there was a Guardian article about it that said, Naps, Tacos, and 11 World Records, how Camille Herron ran 560 miles in 6 days. So that's a pretty cool article. I'll link to that in the show notes. But yeah, so she took some naps, she ate some tacos. It was a 2.55 mile loop around Lake Cahulia. This is according to IRunFar. And Camille's average pace came out to 15 minutes and 22 seconds per mile. And that's over the entire 6 days. So this includes hours of stopped time where Camille would have to sleep, rest, consume calories, you know, drink liquids, do all the things that you need to do when you're out running for 6 days on end. So, I mean, just incredible. And we're gonna talk about the records now. So we'll start out with the 48-hour USATF American Road record. So 247.738 miles that she got to in the first 48 hours of this event. And that's a new record for the USATF. Now, she has the IAU world record and USATF American track record at 270.505 miles. In 2023, she did that. And I believe that was in Australia. So she already holds those records, but she did set the American road record with this one. And then 300 miles, she set that, the women's record for 300 miles in 59 hours, 54 seconds, or I'm sorry, 59 hours, 54 minutes and 58 seconds. And then she went on to set the 500 kilometer record for the women at 62 hours, 50 minutes and 45 seconds. And then she set the 3-day record, 342.091 miles. And then she went on to set the 600 kilometers record. That's 81 hours, 23 minutes and 38 seconds. And then the 400 mile record in 88 hours, 34 minutes and 28 seconds. 4-day record, 429 miles, 0.836, or 429.836 miles. The 700K record, the 800K record, and those are both world records, I believe, outright, men and women. So she was just out there just slaying. And then 500 mile women's record in 118 hours, 19 minutes and 17 seconds. The 5 day, the 900K record, both those world records. And then the 6 day IAU world's best performance, 560 mile, 0.330 miles. That's a women's 6 day world record. So all in all, just what is that? 12 world records. And then 48-hour USATF American road record. So anyway, just an incredible 6 days for Camille. I mean, maybe the best 6 days an ultra runner, a female ultra runner in America has ever, or in the world has ever had. So major congrats to her. She is a great person. I've heard her on several podcasts. She's just really humble. And she's really nice. She's just a really nice person too. So, yeah, just couldn't happen to a better person. So really, really happy for her. Okay. So that was the Lululemon event. Now let's move into some other race results. And I think we're going to start with Antelope Canyon, because something big happened at Antelope Canyon as well. And this is in Page, Arizona, this race. And we're just going to go over the 100 miler because Drew Francis won overall in 20 hours and 23 minutes. And then first place female is none other than Ashley Paulson. Ashley has been on a tear lately. I mean, I think this is the third 100 miler that she's won in the last couple months. So she's just having a great year. And I believe I think she's running Cocodona 250 in May too. So she's on her way to definitely getting top three ultra runners of the year for the ladies. I would say if she keeps up this pace, you know, Camille's definitely going to be in the running for that, just based on what she did in the 6 days. And it's only March, folks. It's only mid-March, so there's a long way to go. And we're gonna just see how this all plays out. But congrats to Ashley on another 100 mile win. I mean, super, super impressive. All right, now let's dive into some other results. And I think we're going to go to Muck 50 mile and Muck 50K. Okay, so I ran Muck on Saturday. You see I'm wearing the hat, the new hat, which I really like. And I'm glad because I actually lost my Canyons hat and I was pretty bummed about that. But then Muck gave us this cool hat. So it's a nice hat to replace my Canyons hat with. So what happened at Muck? So my wife, Jessica, two of her cousins, Joe and Claire, were coming out, and a bunch of their extended family was coming out to San Francisco. And Joe and Claire was running the 50 mile like I did, and Joe was going to run the 50K like I did as well. And since they were coming from out of town, I was hoping that the weather was going to be good. I kept checking the weather. I mean, obsessively checking the weather. And the forecast on Saturday of Muck was rain, no rain. I mean, it just kept flipping back and forth. And the day before, it looked like it was just going to be cloudy. And I'm like, really like, oh, thank God, you know, and this and that. Well, we got to the race, and it was actually like pretty pleasant out at the start line. And, you know, the first 15 miles went by and the weather was looking like, yeah, we're pretty good. You know, everything's going to be good. And in the 50 mile event, we got over to Willow Camp, which is this very steep climb about halfway through the race. And as we're climbing, the mist started moving in. It was pretty foggy up on Mount Tam. So I started getting wet from the fog, and it was so heavy that the trails were a bit muddy over there once we got to the top of Willow Camp. And, you know, we're sloshing through the mud, but I'm thinking to myself, so this is the Mount Tam area. It's wet because of this fog and all the fog, you know, dropping off the trees and all creating the mud. Once we get back to the Tennessee Valley side of things, it's going to be fine, dry trails and all this. Well, little did we know, there was a massive rainstorm that moved through the Tennessee Valley area while we were on Mount Tam, and it just soaked the trails. I mean, they were pretty muddy. I've been on those trails for many, many hours, and honestly, I've never seen them that muddy. So, but you know, it was fun slopping around, and I was actually feeling pretty good in muck, and everything was clicking good. I was moving well. And then I got to around mile 42-43, and I just bonked hard. I think I didn't have enough salt because, you know, it was cool out, but it was oddly a little humid, even though it was cool. And I think everybody was low on salt. At least that's what the guy at the last aid station in Tennessee Valley told me. And it makes sense. But I slogged through to the finish, ended up setting up a 50-mile PR for myself, which I was pretty happy about, and 11 hours and 11 minutes. So, yeah, I was extremely happy with that result. And I came into a crowd of cheering family, and they were also out at one of the aid stations, too, during the race, Muir Beach. So it was great to get a boost then. And all of my wife's family, you know, extended family was there cheering like crazy at the end. And then come to find out that Claire, Jessica's cousin Claire, who ran the 50 miler, she just absolutely destroyed it. And she went under 10 hours and got 22nd place overall, fifth place female. So she just had a really great race. And then she did mention that she really loved the course and the race and everything. So I was happy about that. And then Joe, who did the 50K, he trained so hard for this thing. He really put in a big effort, and he was just hoping to get under the 10-hour cutoff. And that's what he kept saying. I've done races with Joe before. We did our first 50K together. He's a strong runner, and I knew he was going to do a lot better than what he thought. And I was thinking around 8 hours, but he went on to blow that expectation away, and he finished in 7 hours and 20 minutes or around there. So he had a really great race for himself. So I was really happy about that. And we all had a good time. So, you know, Muck is definitely my favorite 50 miler. I love that race. It features all the best trails in Marin County. One of them is Willow Camp, which is in my background right now. If you ever want to sign up for a good March 50 miler with about 10,700 feet of climbing and beautiful trails and great aid stations and just good people, definitely look at Muck 50. Next year, put it on your list. The 50K is also awesome. You know, it features some great trails in Tennessee Valley and the Marin Headlands. So, highly recommend. But anyway, the winner of Muck 50 was Kevin Stewart, and he finished in 7 hours and 5 minutes, which I don't even know how that's remotely possible to do that 50 miler with 10,700 feet of climbing in 7 hours and 50 minutes. I mean, there are some very nice downhills in Muck, so I guess I could see it, but holy crap, that is just cooking, 7 hours and 5 minutes. And then for the ladies, Natalie Cherguin finished in 8 hours and 45 minutes, and she was first place female, and that is still a heck of a time at Muck. So congrats to her. She beat out the second place female by 2 minutes. So super impressive. And then in the 50K, Lindsay Allison won for the ladies in 4 hours and 16 minutes. And Patrick Rabuzzi secured the victory in 3 hours and 51 minutes for the 50K. That's pretty awesome as well. So, okay. And next, we're going to look at Mesquite Canyon. This is an Air Viper race. And in Arizona. And Arizona just has so many races this time of year. I mean, it's crazy. It seems like every weekend there's another Air Viper event. But I do know that it is their high season for races, because once summer hits, it's going to be just way too hot to be out there. So, and there was some pretty big names in this event. And in the men's race, in the men's 50 miler, Nick Curry won. That's Jameel Curry's brother. Jameel is the founder of Air Viper. His brother Nick is super fast. We've talked about him on the show before. He won the 50 miler in 7 hours and 47 minutes. I think there's a decent amount of climbing out there at this one too. And he edged out Bronco Billy, Jeff Browning. Bronco Billy finished in 7 hours and 51 minutes for second place. And then for the ladies in the 50 miler, the course record was beat. Zuzana Chunikova, she finished in 8 hours and 46 minutes. All right. So that was Mesquite Canyon. Now, take a look at the pistol, this race in Tennessee. I think if you finish the 100 miler, I think the belt buckle is shaped like a pistol. So it's kind of cool. Let me pull up the results here for that. Okay. So in the 100 mile race, Chris Stamen set a new Tennessee state record with a blistering time of 14 hours and 1 minute. Wow. So congrats to Chris. That is a crazy fast time. And then Whitney Richmond won the women's race in 18 hours and 37 minutes. And there was several other races at this event. The 100K, Francesca Mussini took the overall win in 10 hours and 16 minutes. And Zach Billman took top honors for the men, 11 hours and 19 minutes. So congrats to Francesca for taking the 100K win outright and beating the men. So it was International Women's Day, I believe March 8th. And that's part of the reason they had that Lululemon event over this weekend, was so that it kind of coincided with International Women's Day as well. So it's kind of cool. And then in the 50 mile race at Pistol, Owen Thornton set a course record in 6 hours and 15 minutes. That's smoking fast. And Shelby Singleton for the women in 8 hours and 36 minutes. In the 50K, Audrey Carter won 3 hours, 52 minutes, and Hector Falcon victory for the men, 3 hours and 22 minutes. And Hector got the overall victory with that, 3 hours and 22 minutes. So some super fast times at the Pistol. All right. And let's see what else we had going on. Land Between the Lakes. This is one in Kentucky that you hear a lot about. And one that when I lived in the Midwest, I kind of wanted to run, but I never did get a chance to do it. So maybe I'll get out there at some point. But they have a 50 mile and a 60K. And then in the 50 mile, Kyle Hummel won 6 hours, 44 minutes. And then for the ladies, Brooke Gibbons got first in 8 hours and 27 minutes. All right. And let's see what else we have. Stump Jump 50K, that's one to hear about, or was always read about in Ultra Running Magazine. But it's a race that's been around a long time. Looking at iRunFar's results page here, Brandon Sullivan won in 5 hours, 33 minutes, and Rachel Vetter in 6 hours and 32 minutes. So congrats to them. And then the final result that I just want to go over is a Joshua Tree Traverse FKT. This was set March 6th by Darren Thomas. And so this route is in Joshua Tree. And the reason why I want to talk about it is because Joshua Tree is this really cool, really cool place. These alien trees are there, and it's really just in the middle of nowhere. There's not... It's in the middle of the desert, basically, and it's something like you've never seen before. So, but there's a 37-mile route, the Joshua Tree Traverse, okay? It's a hiking and riding trail from Black Rock Campground to the north entrance of Joshua Tree National Park, and there's no water along the route. Darren, that set this self-supported FKT, said he stashed water bottles at Ryan Campground, which is mile 19.5, the night before. Got a shuttle from the finish to the start. Started running at 7:45 a.m. Beautiful weather, 60 and sunny. Fun route through Joshua Tree Forest and intersecting rock formations. And beside the trademark sand, very untechnical running. He finished at the north entrance trailhead with a time of 4 hours and 1 minute. So he just completely annihilated that route. And so, yeah, he holds the self-supported record. Okay. Congrats to Darren Thomas for the FKT out at Joshua Tree. All right. That's it for race results. Now we can head into some other fun news stories that we're going to cover. Okay, there's an article that on iRunFar by Mallory Richard that I wanted to touch on. I've been putting it off for the last week or two because we had a lot to talk about, but I figured this is a good time to talk about this article. So this article talks about trying to see if there is any one thing that I'm getting a text from Johnny. Look at that hail, he says. Picture coming in through text. Holy crap. It literally looks like a bunch of marbles, maybe golf balls. I don't know if you can see that. And my camera is not picking it up too well. There. That's the hail outside at Johnny's house, folks. Wow. I hope he's safe. I hope everybody in Central Ohio is safe. I have a lot of friends there. A lot of friends, running friends, college friends. And I hope just in general, everybody's being safe out there. So this diving into ultramarathon DNF data, they really wanted to look and see if there was anything that kind of stands out for reasons why runners DNF. And they looked at several different factors. It says the article draws on two data sets, one composed of results from 25 races and a smaller data set with 10 years worth of splits for a particular race. And both data sets controlled for distance by focusing on 100 mile races. Okay, so we're just talking about 100 milers here. And for the 25 races that were looked at, she intentionally chose races with some variety in their locations, terrain, and elevation and start times. So, you know, look at all factors, try to see if any of those have anything to do with a large portion of DNFs. She says the data set's small. It's admittedly small, but it's compromised of just 25 races and their results from 2023. But it's just a good starting point for fun analysis and something fun to discuss. And I agree. So races that she selected were part of the World Trail Majors, which we've talked about that. That's new this year. And I think there's been three world, or maybe it was new last year, but there are three World Trail Majors that already took place this year. I believe it's three. And then races part of the UTMB World Series, and then races on Ultra Running Magazine's list of largest North American ultras in 2023, or events that she's run personally. And okay, so, and the DNF rate for each event was calculated by dividing the number of runners who DNF by the number of participants who started the race. Runners who did not start were not factored into the DNF rate. Okay, so the first question out of the gate is, do certain factors impact DNF rates? And then she says, rather than keep you in suspense, I'll tell you right now, being the 2023 Western States 100 was the only factor that had a disconcernable impact on DNF rates in this particular data set. And the reason for this is that in 2023, over 85% of runners who started Western States crossed the finish line within the 30-hour time limit. And the DNF rate was 13.5%. So that's an extremely high finisher rate for Western States. And I know the one implication that you would look to immediately with Western States is it was a very cool year for Western States. Very rare cool year. And that probably had a lot to do with the finisher, with the high finisher rate. Because the previous 20 editions of Western States, the average DNF rate was 27%. So yeah, it was a lot better this year, or in 2023. And probably because of the weather, but there could be other factors she mentions that could lead to this. You know, in Western States, you have to qualify. So the challenge, and it's very hard to get into Western States, right? Through the lottery, you know, there's over easily over 7,000 tickets and, or 7,000 runners. Maybe. I don't know that the chances are very, 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 very slim to get into Western States. So that being said, if you did get into Western States, it's your one shot and you're going to train like you've never trained before. Right. So that could be one factor for high finisher rate. Right? Also the waitlist runners, you know, they, Western States maintains a waitlist. So runners who believe they won't finish have the option of making another runner's dream come true. They can withdraw from the race in advance, so another runner can have the opportunity. So, you know, there could be multiple reasons why somebody might not want or might not think they can finish if they, you know, had stuff going on, whatever. But So those factors being said, the 2023 was just absolutely a high finisher rate. But beyond that, through all the observations or statistical trends, they didn't really notice many differences with DNFs. And I'll just go over this. So the average DNF in a limited sample data set was 38% DNF. So DNF distribution of DNF rates among the 25 races in the sample data set, there were 13 out of the 25 races had a 30 to 39% DNF rate. And these are 100-mile races. And three had a 50 to 59% DNF rate. Six had a 40 to 49% DNF rate. Two had a 20 to 29%. And one had a 10 to 19%. So typically it's 30 to 39% DNF rate. DNF rates by total elevation change. You would think maybe races with more climbing would have a higher DNF rate, but they did not find that to be true. And, you know, the reason for that is that usually the races with more climbing have a higher time limit, right? So you have more time to complete those races. DNF rates by time cutoffs. So, you know, some races have 30-hour cutoffs, some have 32 hours, some have 34, 36, 48. There really was no correlation between the time cutoff for a race and the DNF. And DNF, for those of you who don't know, is did not finish. Sorry, I should have said that at the beginning of this. DNF rates by race day start time. So they had start times at 6 p.m., 6 a.m., you know, 10 a.m., all different start times for these races. And there was really no strong correlation between start times and DNFs. And then this other section, wither the DNF. And she was curious to know where the danger zone for dropping from a race might be. So this is like, at what mile in the race did someone DNF? Okay. And she would like to expand upon this analysis in the future, but the data from Superior Fall Trail Race 100 mile confirms what is suspected. You're most likely to DNF your 100 mile race during the section of the race where your legs are tired, but you still have many miles to cover. So counting all DNFs by aid station for this race for the years where splits are available online, 2014 to 2023, they're plotted in this graph. And the most DNFs in this, out of all those years, happened at mile 62.9. So I would totally agree with that. You know, that's the point where you're just completely destroyed. Your mind's telling you this isn't for you. you're just not made for 100 milers. You're okay with dropping. I've gone 63 miles. I can hardly move, and I still have 37 miles to go. And there's no way that is possible. And there's no way I could do it within the remaining time. Well, that's not true, because I know many people, including myself, that have come back from the dead at mile 60, mile 70, mile 80 by just getting some calories and resting for a little bit, getting some caffeine and getting back out there. You can totally turn it around and feel like a new person. But I can see why most DNFs at that race from those years were mile 62.9. Like the author said, It's the section where you're section of the race where your legs are tired, but you still have many miles to cover. So why did they DNF? Okay. Results and splits only tell part of the story. And so the American Trail Running Association aggregated experiences of 1,200 survey respondents in a 2022 article. And the survey provided runners with a list of reasons they might DNF a trail race of any distance. And runners could select all of the reasons that contributed to any of their past DNFs. As you can see, the results here, the highest percentage was I injured myself during the race, and that was 27%. So not a super high amount for any one thing. The next was 24%. I didn't make a cutoff time. That's a pretty good reason, I guess, for dropping, because they wouldn't let you continue anyways. Sometimes cutoff times can be mental, though. Sometimes you start thinking to yourself, oh, it's going to be close at this next aid station. So, you know, I'm done anyways. I might as well just slow it down. And, you know, thoughts cross your mind of, I'm okay with not making this cutoff. So you're just naturally not going to push yourself. But 24% were because of that. 20% was I got sick during the race. And you can always turn that around, getting sick, you know, just salt, sugar, water. Like Johnny says, that's the key, salt, sugar, water. You got to maintain that stuff. If you get sick, you can turn that around. Sometimes it's harder than others. Pain in feet, calves, knees, or quads, 15%. Okay. There's no way to avoid this, people. You're going to get pain in your feet. You're going to get pain in your calves. You're going to get pain in your knees. You're going to get pain in your quads. That is unavoidable. But 15% of people DNF because of that. Yeah, I think, you know, again, it boils down to the mental aspect, really. You could keep going. You just choose not to. So... I didn't feel like running anymore, 11%. Again, the mental side of it, right? I'm done with this. I'm not made for this. 9%, I knew I couldn't finish. And I could kind of see that if the writing is on the wall and you gave it your best, you know, there's not much you can do about that. Things didn't go your way. And you know for a fact that you're not going to make the cutoffs. I got lost or went way off course, 6%. Course was harder than I thought it would be, and I was in over my head, 5%. Yeah, I mean, I guess that could happen if you don't do your homework. But usually if I'm signing up for a 100-miler, I'm studying that thing like crazy. Like it's a really big deal. You know, I'm not just signing up for something without researching it first. I ran out of hydration or calories, 5%. That could be a death sentence, because if you get dehydrated or you get low on calories, that is going to make or break your race for sure. But only 5% dropped out because they ran out of hydration or calories. 2%, I realized I wouldn't get the competitive result I wanted. So I think that kind of falls with the elite runners a lot, where they, you know, if they're not going to win or not going to podium, they'll drop out. And I think overall, I feel like we're seeing less and less of that these days. But you know, I'm not sure the exact numbers on that. And equipment or gear failure was 1%. So... yeah. All right. So that was it. You know, no conclusive evidence on DNFs, but I thought it was pretty fun topic to at least talk about and maybe see if they do any initial analysis on this subject in the future. And and the article here says that 10 Junk Miles, Scott Coomer, which is also a great podcast. Scott Coomer is a really awesome podcast host. I really enjoy listening to him. And he reminded the author that DNF represents an essential aspect of the ultra marathon. And it is true. I have DNF'd two 100 milers, one because of a pain in my foot that lasted. I limped for at least 20 miles and ended up timing out. And that was back when I wore ultra superiors, which are a little more minimal than the Lone Peaks, which I wear now. And I think just by the sheer fact of having that minimal cushion led to this pain in my foot. It was so bad I could hardly walk for 20 miles. So anyway, that was 100 mile DNF. And the next was just a whole sequence of things that happened. So I won't get into it too much, but I do have a blog write up, and it was my first running of, or my running of Mountain Lakes in 2017. So, but yeah, I don't have time to go into all that, maybe on a different episode, but it is an essential aspect of ultra marathoning. And one thing I will say is that if you're like me, you'll learn a lot from your DNF. You learn a lot about what went wrong, and you work to resolve it. You work to make sure that that never happens again, especially in a 100-mile race, because, you know, you do pour your heart and soul into training for a 100-mile race. Well, a lot of us do. And it takes time away from our family. It takes time away from, you know, just doing normal life stuff. You know, so family and friends and are kind of, you know, they don't get you in your best self, because you're always thinking about your long run coming up, or you're always having to just be low key and not hang out because you got a training run the next day, or you're running out the door to run for an hour or two after work every day. You know, it's just, it's very time consuming. It's very life consuming. We wouldn't do it if we didn't love it. It's, you know, it's very fulfilling, but at the same time, it's very consuming. So, we want to make sure we get the result that, or whatever our goal is, to finish a 50 mile race, 100 mile race, whatever it is, we want to achieve our goals. So that's the main thing. And but yeah, definitely learn a lot from DNFs. All right, so I think that's about it for that article that I wanted to go over. I see we're about 50 minutes in. I think I have one topic that I want to talk about that might take a little longer, so I think we'll save that until the next episode. But I do want to close out with a fun little achievement here, a little article. Let me share this tab. Okay. So this article is from CTV News. And I didn't hear about this until just recently, but Donna Urquhart set a record for the longest run ever in Antarctica. Okay. I guess we can't get much further south than Antarctica, folks. That is the South Pole, and it is cold. She battled sub-zero temperatures and ferocious winds to record the longest ever run in Antarctica. And so she went 871 miles over the course of 28 days. And she started on December 15th, which I guess is summertime down there. But summertime in Antarctica isn't like summertime in America, in North America, I should say. She fought through temperatures as low as negative 4 degrees Fahrenheit, winds as strong as 50 miles per hour. There was moments which Antarctica lived up to its reputation as the coldest, windiest, driest places on Earth. And she said it was a whole mix of emotions about breaking the record. It was a challenge that she dubbed Run Antarctica. And obviously, she was happy and relieved, a bit emotional and teary. She probably, the main feeling was just a feeling of really proud of what she and her team had achieved. It was a long journey, didn't know if they could get to Antarctica in the first place. The funding and the logistics are massive. She's from Melbourne, or lives in Melbourne, Australia. And she works as a researcher and a scientist. She's investigated the relationship between pain and endurance sports. Some describe her as a pain scientist. Kind of interesting. All kinds of stuff out there that we don't know about. First-hand experience of the kind of energy sapping discomfort to which ultra marathon runners are accustomed. So yeah, I guess a pain scientist would be super interested in ultra marathoning because we definitely go through all the pains. And running on Antarctica's Union Glacier exposed Urquhart to a whole different, to a wholly different challenge, particularly for someone used to Australia's warm weather and sandy beaches. So she's coming from Australia, where it's known to be super hot, to Antarctica. So I guess she was a good experiment for herself, being a pain scientist. No female had attempted this before, and that was certainly intriguing for her to be exploring untouched opportunities. She was fascinated by Antarctica's unspoiled landscape, the beauty, the vastness, and the fact that it's really untouched. One of the few untouched places on Earth, really, if you think about it. You know, humans, we've put ourselves pretty much everywhere. She spent 10 months preparing for the challenge. It turned to some unusual training methods. There was a container company that allowed her to put a treadmill in the refrigerated storage unit and run for 3 or 4 hours in sub-zero temperatures each weekend. She also partnered with an automotive parts company to train inside an industrial wind tunnel. Like, that's taking training to a whole new level, I would say. They learned that anything over 80 kilometers per hour is incredibly dangerous and cold. It was a really useful exercise. Also learned how cold is cold, but when you have cold and wind together, it's just another X factor again. Wind just brings the temperature down so significantly. And I can definitely speak to that, you know, living in the Midwest and going to school at Bowling Green State University, which is just a flat agricultural area. And the wind would just whip through in the winter, just whip through campus. It's just brutal walking to class sometimes. But yeah, no, wind chill, it definitely makes a huge difference. I mean, you know, it can be 10 degrees Fahrenheit outside, but with wind chill, you know, you could be looking at temperatures well into the negatives. So on less extreme training days, she would train along the beaches in Melbourne, anticipating the uneven surface would simulate the varied terrain in Antarctica, and that proved to be useful. Often found herself stumbling and falling in the snow while the soles of her feet became sore from running more than 30 miles each day. 2 weeks on, she still had lots of soft tissue swelling in her feet. She had numerous challenges. She would eat about 5,000 calories a day, mix of powders, gels, sports bars, dehydrated food that she brought from home, as well as meals she could access in the Glacier Camp, Union Glacier Camp. Her accommodation came in the form of a two-person tent, which she shared with her husband. But the continent's 24 hours of sunlight in the summer, combined with the sounds of howling winds, were hardly conducive to a good night's sleep. Yeah, that would be pretty brutal. It's always daylight, even in the middle of the night, and you're in these extreme conditions. Definitely not much sleep being had. Clothing was crucial. Urquhart would usually wear 4 layers, 2 thermal tops, a fleece, a windbreaker jacket, but had to pay close attention to her body temperature while running. because it's important not to get too cold because you could risk hypothermia and frostbite. But it's actually also about not getting too hot. So there's a fine line there, right? You don't want to start sweating because that could also lead to hypothermia once that sweat freezes in your skin. Her body adapted. She didn't get tired of looping around the same 10K route. She found it therapeutic. She enjoyed the fact that it was something that was familiar in the unfamiliar world of being in a polar region that could constantly change and vary. It was actually quite comforting. Finding comfort in the face of hardship and struggle is a skill that ultra runners acquire quicker than most, especially in a sport, which requires resilience to pain and mind to conquer matter. It fascinated her that something so profound and so special could also be so tough. So like a two-edged sword, and Antarctica is the same. It has beauty, but it's also brutal. And ain't that the truth about ultra running, trail and ultra running in general. So I just wanted to go over that. I thought it was pretty cool. Like I really like unique challenges and that people are coming up with. And this is definitely one of the most unique. I'll link to this article as well. There's a picture of her running out there in the frozen tundra of Antarctica. So, all right. I think I'm going to leave you there. Definitely missed having Johnny on the show today, but next week he'll be back and he'll make the show a little more interesting than what I can do. I know I'm a little dry to just present the news and some interesting stuff, but he had some nice commentary to it. So definitely looking forward to getting Johnny back, and hope that everybody again, in Central Ohio is being safe out there. So go ahead and if you haven't done so, give us a like, or if you're listening on the podcast, please rate the podcast on whatever platform you're using. We'd appreciate it. And I guess that's all I have for now. So thanks everyone for listening, and we will catch y'all on the next one.